From California to Philadelphia to St. Louis to Kansas City, Dick Vermeil ran the football marathon and came out a winner, most especially so in the form of two Super Bowl appearances and a victory in Super Bowl 34. Now, after 3 decades in coaching, to go along with 14 years in the broadcast booth, Vermeil's post-retirement life has yielded in a shift in priorities. For so long, his passions were blocking and tackling. Now they center around Cabernet and Chardonnay. So, Coach, first of all, before we get into football, how has the wine business been these days?
Not good enough. No, it's been real slow in the Napa Valley because of all the weather problems. So we don't get the traffic that we normally get this time of year coming in for the start of the spring. But anyway, it'll pick up as soon as the weather gets better.
VermeilWines.com is the website, and you're located out there in Calistoga, California, out in the Napa Valley and wine country.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. I'm born and raised there, so you know we're doing okay. Now, some more states have eased up. We can ship direct, for example, now to Pennsylvania, which is nice. We have some customers there now, and we're making 3,000 cases of wine. You can't go to every state, but we sure appreciate it. Since I coach the Eagles and I coach the Chiefs and I coach the Rams, that we can at least get wine shipped legally to those areas that know the Vermeil name.
Yeah, I was gonna say Pennsylvania. You got some good contacts out there.
Yes, I do.
But before we get to the Eagles, the first significant head coaching job you had was also in California, and that was at UCLA. And it took just 2 years to turn them into conference champions and then beat an unbeaten Ohio State squad in the 1976 Rose Bowl. At age 39 and in just your second year as head coach there, were you able to appreciate the magnitude of that win as much as you probably do now, or you would have if it happened later in your coaching career?
You know, I look back at it now with better respect than I did when we won it. It was all emotion, all passion and excitement when we won it. And, you know, when I look back on it now, I really appreciate more what those players did to do what they did and my coaching staff that helped me get it done. You know, that was huge when you beat the number one team in the country and in a Rose Bowl like that. But when you're young and full of passion and excitement and that kind of stuff, when you get 80, become 80 years old, you look back on those events and you realize they're even bigger than you thought they were at that time.
On the heels of that Rose Bowl victory, you accepted the head coaching job with the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that hadn't made the postseason since 1960, since they won the NFL championship. In 2 seasons, you take the Eagles to the playoffs, and in 1980, you guide them to the Super Bowl. Nowadays, we see the great affection these players have for you when we talk about Ron Jaworski, Harold Carmichael, Wilbert Montgomery, and others. But at first, I mean, you were quite tough on them, and there may not have been that affection. So how did those relationships with certain players evolve to the point of affection and love for one another?
Well, actually, that comes to the fact that they knew I was working them as hard as I was working them so they could be the best they could be. There were no selfish intent, no selfish reason. I wasn't trying to enhance my career. I was trying to help all those guys be the best they could be so consequently we could accomplish some things together. And, you know, when you really care about people like I do and they do, they forgive you for working them a little harder than they think they ought to be working. You know, and sometimes it takes a while to teach young people that hard work is not a form of punishment. You know, and it takes them a while. And once they do, in fact, when we get together, that's all they talk about now. They brag about how hard they work and compared to how they work today.
And through that care you had for the players, you showed great outward emotion as a coach, coming to tears quite often, both for good events and for bad ones. And I'm sure that's also what endeared your players towards you. Was that level of emotion something perhaps maybe you got from your, you know, parents, or was that a product of your passion for the game and those you coached?
Well, I think it's a product of my own innate personality and then the passion I have for people, the passion I had for the game. You know, I have real compassion for people and a passion for the game. So I'm an emotional personality, not stable enough emotionally to not prevent myself from burning out in 1982. But it's both a strength and a weakness. But, you know, you have to be who you are. And people and players will accept who you are as long as they know you're authentic and you're real and that you care about them. So I think that's how our relationships built. And we did a lot of things off the field as well as on the field together that helped bond us. And hey, we're best of friends today.
The NFC Championship belongs to the folks in green and white. What a display they put on today.
And there were definitely tears of joy after the Eagles beat the Dallas Cowboys to win the NFC Championship and advance to Super Bowl 15. Which was in New Orleans against the Oakland Raiders, at a game in which the Raiders would eventually win 27-10. Looking back, what did you cite as the main difference in the game between the Raiders and the Eagles?
Well, I didn't do a good enough job running the offense at that time. Myself, as I look back, I'm critical of myself. I was my own offensive coordinator and quarterback coach and called the plays. We turned the ball over three times. We were minus three in turnovers. It didn't give us much of a chance. And if I could use an excuse that two of our three best wide receivers couldn't play in the game against a team that played bump and run press man coverage, that made it really tough on us. And you just have to give Oakland Raiders and Plunkett credit. They just did a better job than I did that day.
Yeah, Jim Plunkett would win the MVP in that game. And after a couple more years, as you cited, you retired from burnout. You retired from the Eagles in 1982 due to burnout. Was that a firm retirement at the time, or did you think, after maybe a few years, you would eventually return to coaching?
I thought I would go back in at least 1 year. I didn't realize I'd stay out 14, but I was given a job in broadcasting. They doubled my salary. I went from making $75,000 a year coaching Eagles to $150,000 broadcasting NFL games on CBS, and I enjoyed it. It was fun, and there was I enjoyed being around football, and it also gave me time to regroup emotionally. And I had opportunities to go back, and I didn't go back. I didn't want to find myself in the same hole I was in when I left. But finally, I went back thanks to John Shaw, Georgia Fontier, and Jay Zygmunt of the St. Louis Rams got me to go back, and God, we got it all done in 3 years.
Now, during that 14-year period, as you said, you were in broadcasting. I know the Eagles tried to reach out to you. I'm trying to think of like 94 or something. But were there other instances in which teams called you?
Oh, yeah. At 13 of the 14 years, I was approached to become a head coach if I wanted to. And I had three jobs offered to me. Okay. Instead, the job was mine if I wanted it. On the telephone. So, and I don't brag about it. That just happened. And as I look back, I'm sorry I didn't go back sooner.
Happy New Year. Welcome, everybody. I'm Brent Musburger with the coach, Dick Vermeil. So, Dick, Arizona State thinking about a national championship. What about this exciting team?
Well, they are a national championship caliber offensive football team. And from midseason on, they've played that way.
And your time in the broadcast booth was spent as an analyst for both CBS and ABC over the course of those 14 years away from coaching. And much of that time was spent beside Brent Musburger doing college football games in the 1990s. And as a child of the 90s, I really enjoyed those games that you and Brent did. As Brent has just recently ended his play-by-play duties following a spectacular career, what memories do you have of working with him?
Well, first off, he's just a great person, a great personality, a very bright, a great broadcaster. And he could carry me, then you know how good he is. But I just enjoyed the relationship with him, our preparation, the presentation of the game, and he was fun to be with. Always extremely well prepared. I don't think there's ever been anybody do a better job than Brent Musburger.
No, I would agree with that. By 1997, the St. Louis Rams come calling, and you're hired as their next head coach. Many critics felt 14 years was too long of a layoff. And you may have touched on this, but was there a time either before you started coaching the Rams or early on in your time with the Rams that you felt, gee, maybe I did spend a little too much time away from this?
Yeah, my first year I felt a little shaky. I made a lot of mistakes, but I got going thanks to my coaching staff and that we got going. And, you can lose a lot of things, but normally you don't lose your ability to lead. you know, and I was behind technically, but instead of trying to run my own offense, I hired coaches to coach, and instead of trying to run my own defense, I had coaches to coach, and I, you know, I had brought Frank Gans Sr. with me to coach the special teams, and just had, you know, Mike White came as an assistant head coach, and Lynn Stiles as an administrative assistant, and we put it all together. Going into the second year, we had it put together, and the second year made the third year.
Mm-hmm. And that third year, before it started, things looked to be improving prior to 1999 with Trent Green coming in as a quarterback, Marshall Faulk as running back. But then Green goes down with a season-ending injury in a preseason game, and that led to you emotionally saying in a press conference, we'll rally behind Kurt Warner and we'll play good football. You certainly knew Warner, pretty much all of us didn't, and then you had the confidence, and you had confidence in what he was capable of. But could you have imagined what he would turn into and what the offense would become that 1999 season?
I thought he would be a good player. I didn't realize he'd be a Hall of Fame player. Nobody could predict that. But Mike Martz came in and did a wonderful job with the offense, you know, and John Masco came in and helped within the offensive line coach. Dana LeDuc came in the offseason program, a training program. Al Saunders came and helped Mike Martz with the offense and coaching the wide receivers. And those guys just did a remarkable job. Nobody ever did a better job than those guys did that year. You go from winning four games to winning a world championship, you've done a hell of a job.
Yeah, it was quite the turnaround behind Mike Martz as offensive coordinator, Warner, Faulk, 13-3 record, the NFC West title, and a win over Tampa Bay in the NFC Championship. And this Cinderella season ends in Super Bowl 34 in Atlanta against the Tennessee Titans. When you compare it with the other Super Bowl you were in 19 years before, what did you do differently in terms of preparing the Rams as opposed to Super Bowl 15 preparing the Eagles?
I didn't do much differently, but see, the first time we had 2 weeks, we had a bye in between. Mm-hmm. When we were with the Rams the second time, we had no bye. On Monday, we were on an airplane flying to Atlanta to prepare to play the Super Bowl next Sunday. It really isn't fair to an NFL team to be able to or have to do that, but we did. We couldn't even make arrangements to get some of your family to the frickin' game. It was, you know, so much pressure on you. But I think our approach, I went into the game with more confidence. I didn't think they could beat us. And I think I convinced my team that if we did what we had the ability to do, they couldn't beat us. And we came down within 6 inches of being wrong. But fortunately, we were right. Jeff Fisher and his staff did a great job of coming back to make it one of the finer Super Bowl games ever. So, you know, yeah, I have to have some good fortune as well.
Yeah, no, as we all remember, and as you were watching, the game ended with Kevin Dyson being tackled by Mike Jones 1 yard short of the end zone, and a spectacular 23-16 victory for your team. But what were your emotions like when Steve McNair was leading the Titans down the field to what seemed like it would be the game-tying drive?
Well, to be honest with you, I was planning for overtime. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Mike Martz, the offensive coordinator. Hey, Mike, we better get ready. If they score, we better get ready for overtime. Start putting your game plan sauce for the first series of downs. Remember, the overtime situations were different at that time. First team to score wins. So that were my thoughts. I couldn't say anything to Peter Jundt, to the defensive coaches, because they were busy working. But I did talk to Mike Martz most of that drive coming down when they were going to look like they were going in to score.
From the 10, probably the final play of the game. In regulation. It is caught by Dyson. Can he get in? No, he cannot. Mike Jones made the tackle. And the Rams have won the Super Bowl.
And that turned out to be your final game with the Rams. When was the decision made that Super Bowl 34 was, in fact, your final game with St. Louis?
2 days after the game, way too soon. Georgia wanted me to wait 2 weeks and give it some thought. Me, impulsive as I am, emotional as I am, I decided, hey, my kids wanted me home with them, my grandchildren, home with them. We were able to accomplish something that is like a dream come true. You win a world championship, go out with the last game of your career being a Super Bowl win. There's no negatives to that. Once I got out, when I went back for the awards dinner and handed out the Super Bowl rings, I recognized I made a mistake. I should have stayed. You know, I don't live in regrets. I realized I made a mistake, and I move on.
If the Rams had lost, do you think you would have come back?
I don't think so. I think I would have done the same thing. I can't answer that. I don't know. I know this. I'm very thankful to Lamar Hunt and Carl Peterson for coaxing me to come to Kansas City and coach, because that was a great 5-year experience as well.
Yeah. And it was after a year off, you take the head coaching job with the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, like you did going back coaching high school, coaching UCLA with the Eagles, Rams, and then you turned Kansas City into winners as well, going 44-36 over 5 seasons. We often hear about, you know, for some coaches that they may hang on too long, that the game has passed them by, and that they were unable to change with the times, both in the way the game is played and the personalities of the players. But that really never seemed to happen with you. You won and connected with your players, you know, back from the 70s and into the 2000s. What do you think helped you adapt so well and be successful in different eras?
Because I remained myself, my own personality. I wasn't positively or negatively influenced by outside influences. I just remained Dick Vermeil, true to myself, tried to be real, authentic to the players, honest as hell, let them know that I cared about them. I think I presented a good example for them. I created an atmosphere in which they enjoyed coming in and going to work. I helped them develop team relationships and coaching relationships, and we didn't bullshit them. You know, and then they buy in. And once they all buy in, boy, when you become connected emotionally, that team gets stronger.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Coach, I'll be sure to purchase a bottle of wine in appreciation of you coming on and chatting with me. Thanks so much.
Just Google VermeilWines.com and we'll ship it to your door.
Absolutely. That's great. Thanks so much for your time and all the best to you.
Take care.
To listen to more episodes, including interviews with Mario Andretti, Ken Burns, and Jack Hamm, among others, subscribe to the Profiles in Sports podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, and elsewhere. Also, please check out our website, profilesinsports.com, as well as our Facebook page. And lastly, you can follow me on Twitter, @BrianWright86.